Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 312, episode 4 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah! Wait, was it just 311? What's going on here? Somewhere in the mix, somebody came in the dock, changed it to 312. This 311 erasure will not stand.
Okay, wait, are we doing this? Are we keeping this?
I think we should keep it,
okay,
because there's a conspiracy to paper over season 311 like it's
slander,
not happening. Like it's the 13th floor elevator. Come on. Super producer Victor, apparently. I mean, you know, we're going to have to dig into his anti-311 bias. Anyways.
They're from Omaha, I think.
Yeah. So who knows when they crossed paths and wronged super producer Victor, but it definitely happened. Anyways, it's season 311, episode 4 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist,
a production of iHeartRadio. Mm-hmm. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Thursday, November 2nd, 2023.
Oh, yeah.
This is our first full ep after Halloween.
Yeah.
A happy day after Halloween.
Yeah.
To you?
Exactly. Or 2 days, but yes, we record, you know.
Crow flies.
What is today? It's National Men Make Dinner Day. Wow. That's
wow. Ooh,
a quality on the way. Just one day. Men make dinner today, this first Thursday in November. Then it's National Deviled Egg Day. I'm with that. National Broadcast
Those
Traffic
Those two are
Professional
probably tied
Day.
Together a little bit, maybe.
Dad Honey, make I made dinner. Deviled eggs.
I made deviled eggs as the main course, darling.
With a bag salad. And then also, Jack, this one's for you. National Ohio Day and All Souls Day. I don't know what I know it's All Saints Day and Day of the Dead. Oh, this is apparently about... Oh, this is some religious stuff about purgatory. And to that I say, who's to say this isn't purgatory? Ah,
that's
let's
right.
Let's get philosophical,
Aha.
shall we?
Aha.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And happy All Saints, All Souls Day, and with your spirit. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. It's what it's, and it's now or never. These pants won't stay dry forever. I'll just blame the stain on water ice. It's what it's, urethra like an open highway. I just had to get to the urethra like an open highway.
Oh, wow.
Courtesy of La Caroni on the Discord. And I'm thrilled to be joined. As, by the way, that song, It's My Life. Usually when there's a song that I have to do for an AKA4, I'll go back and listen. And I'm always like, man, that song actually is really good.
Like, yeah. There's something about this production, like, that when I listen to it as a song, really stands out. And I'm like, hey, you know, there's some good song, right? This one, no such luck. I was like, man, what the fuck is Jon Bon Jovi doing with his vocals in this shit? He's like, he sounds like he's doing, like, a joke about, like, yarling voices. It sounds like he's, like, making fun of the singer of Nickelback. But anyways, we love you, John. We love you.
Yanni.
Thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Whoa, 311 is the season of the TDZ. Whoa, that's an intentional use of a redundant the. Shout out to Wavy Pumpkin. We get the T and TDZ is for the, and you still did the TDZ.
The TDZ.
We get it. Thank like you it. For that. Giving all respect to the Omaha, Nebraska rap, rock, reggae band 311. Okay, that is you, Wavy Pumpkin.
They were not white supremacists whose band names signified KKK.
No,
right?
they were very clear. They're like, we have nothing. First of all, what the fuck are y'all talking about? I think it was like the room number of their like band room in high school.
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with the high school and not. That's why I remember I was about to go to 311 show and I was like, wait, I just want to make sure I'm not going to be around some weird skinhead people. But they've been pretty clear. Like, no, we're not about this shit ever. Yeah. So please miss us with all of these readings into the name.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined by a wildly talented musician.
Yay.
It's always fun to have a wildly talented musician on when
we sing,
you know,
off key.
I'm singing off key. Jon Bon Jovi covers about pissing my pants.
Or the mouth trumpet. That was pretty good.
I don't know.
The mouth trumpet intro.
You are here with one of the best mouth trumpeteers in these United States. Wildly talented vocalist, songwriter, composer, whose most recent album was named among the best albums of the year by Bandcamp and the Sunday Times. She's performed on stages all over the world.
Yep.
Now she's here listening to us sing badly. She's also the host of a podcast, radio series, and live show called Movement. Please welcome the brilliantly talented MacLeet Hedera!
MacLeet!
Hey!
What's up?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with y'all today.
So good to have you. So good to have you. How's the weather in the Bay Area? You're coming to us from the Bay, correct?
Yeah, I mean, every day is more or less the same. Like, wake up in the upper 50s,
right.
In the about 70 by the end, you know, but and then cold at night.
Did you grow up in the Bay?
No, I grew up in a lot of places. I grew up in, like, well, the long list. I can do it in one breath.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
Addis Ababa, Dusseldorf, Washington, D.C., Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Iowa City, Iowa, Brooklyn, Jacksonville, Gainesville, Miami, London for just a semester, but it was pretty formative. New Haven, Seattle, and San Francisco for almost 20 years. Yeah.
For 20 years now.
Almost 20 years.
So that's a real testament to San Francisco. It stands out among the pack.
I know.
It finally won you over after all that wandering.
Not Cedar Rapids with the Quaker factory there?
I remember the Quaker factory. I absolutely remember that. No, we didn't know anybody else in this whole country except my dad's college professor. And he said, come on out and live with us. And so we spent some time in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Wow.
It was interesting. It was interesting.
I'm sure. Yeah. Coming from Ethiopia to Iowa, that seems like a bit of a, you're hitting the switch there.
And
culture. Right.
Yeah. It's a sort of that sound over and over again.
Right. Record scratch.
Amazing. Your dad was presumably a good student. None of my college professors were ever like, come live with me, sir.
Yeah. They're like, wait, are you the guy that was always smelling like two-day-old beer in class?
Yeah, me.
Old beer. It's
the guy
old beer.
Who like seemed perpetually hungover. We were actually like wondering how it was medically possible that you were that hungover all the time.
Right. Wait, wasn't that everybody in college?
Oh my
no.
God.
Oh, yeah,
I was particularly bad. Like I didn't stand up very much because of how hungover I was.
Oh,
you had that extra lean in the seat, like you were all the way back, like almost laying down.
Yeah. Almost fetal in one of those like lecture hall chairs. He's curled up.
I can see it now. I can see it now. My dad was a genius. He's he is a genius. He speaks six languages. He's he is truly, truly amazing.
That's very
cool. He's an amazing person. Yeah.
Amazing. Well,
my dad only speaks one language. So
yeah.
Sucks.
Same.
Yeah.
Well. And my dad only speaks Philadelphian.
Wait, what's Philadelphian? Like, what is a phrase of Philadelphian?
Sausage. You say sausage instead of sausage.
Yeah.
You say wooder. Although my dad doesn't. Really? I actually can't tell. Like, sometimes people will be like, oh, your parents have like a Philadelphia accent. And I can't hear it because like all other voices are built out of their voices in my brain.
That's you know? Right.
So I'm like, do they? But yeah, no, he's pretty, like, he's not deep Philly, like, yeah, what's up? How you doing? Let's get some water
ice.
About,
like, jeet yet?
Jeet yet? No. Yeah.
What's that? Wait, I literally have like, no yeet, idea what
you
just said.
Yet?
Did you eat yet?
Jeet
yet?
Okay.
Or, like, are Yinz, is that Yinz Pennsylvania? Is that Pittsburgh?
Yinz is Pittsburgh, and people will tell you that Pittsburgh accents are very different from Philadelphia accents. Right. And maybe if you are a lifelong connoisseur of the two, but there are some strange specifics, particulars of the Pittsburgh accent where they'll say any more, they'll leave a hanging any more that doesn't relate to anything. They'll say, did you guys eat any more or something like that? Like, it doesn't really make sense. But other than that, like, it's very, they're very similar. They are part of the same accent tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Both lovely.
Most lovely accents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your dad did call this podcast a John. I remember. He's like,
John.
I was like,
you gonna
really
record that, John?
Yeah.
All right. Well, McLeet, we are gonna get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're gonna tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. Joe Biden has apparently created some guardrails around AI technology. Because he saw the latest Mission Impossible movie. Like, that's straight up what happened. Is he
leader of the free world, folks.
Leader of the free world. And his media diet included the most recent Mission Impossible movie. And he was like, we got to do something. And that is both amazing and also not uncommon at all for U.S. presidents. So we're going to take a look back at some other policies that we got because of, you know, just movies. That president saw.
Because some dude
saw, they
saw
something. Because they were just like, something was on HBO.
No way. That's a character Matthew Broderick is playing. I don't care. Get him up here.
Yeah. The genocidal rhetoric is getting more and more mainstream, and there's just wild shit being said on the fringes too. But like Vivek Ramaswamy said some of the just foulest shit I've ever seen on like mainstream media outlets and kind of got away with it. And then there's just all sorts of shit happening and with like comedians and just like, I don't know. It's a fucking
Lindsey
mess.
Lindsey Graham,
out there.
Too, is also
Lindsey Graham
making some really weird, some very odd equivocations. But we'll talk about that.
Just the Islamophobia is really out of control right now. And nobody really seems to want to talk about it. So we will. We'll also talk about Mariah Carey's newest video ushering in the Christmas season.
Love a segue. Like the unaddressed rampant Islamophobia in the United States. And Mariah Carey has got a silly little Christmas
video. Has got us all excited about Christmas.
Oh, shit.
All of that. Plenty more. But before we get to it, McLeet, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
My search history right now is pretty much just music, 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 music. I go down rabbit holes of music and because it's like I'm always trying to find new immigrant musicians for the podcast. But if you think about it, like, where do you find music? You find it in like certain, you know, magazines or really from your friends. Like, but I just go down rabbit holes. Mm. I just love going down rabbit holes. So I think Instagram counts as like a search history. So I was searching for like this wonderful Indian musician called Ganayava. I've been looking at Aloe Black and Layla McCalla and just like, I just go down rabbit holes of music. So that's what I got for you.
I thought you were saying at first that your search history was literally music, 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 music. And I was going to try that and see what I got. I'll test it out and let you guys know what the first result is.
Right. When you say rabbit hole, because like I kind of do the same thing when I'm like on a music app where sometimes if I like an artist and it says other artists like this, I just never stop clicking those to see where it takes me. Because that was always like, I remember in the days of MySpace when I was really into a musician and faithfully music pages on MySpace, people would be like, and my influences are, and they would just give you a huge block of names. I would always use that to kind of put me onto new stuff. But is that sort of, what's your methodology here?
I use the algorithms, but I also like to see who's friends with who. So you see people commenting on each other's posts a lot.
Right.
And that's sort of interesting because I like the way that you see communities overlap. I'm like, who is interacting with whom? Who's building community with whom? Like what's and then that leads me to a lot of other music as well.
And then from there, you got to do a little background to be like, okay, do you qualify in the, are you in the bracket of immigrant musician in another country? So yeah, then I can see how the research can be exhaustive.
It's a lot of research, but it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's someone that you stumbled upon that you're like, oh, this is one of the greatest musicians that I've completely had no idea about?
I think, well, let's see, through that whole process, a little while ago, I stumbled onto an artist called Sancha. Okay. And she's a Mexican singer based in L.A.
Okay.
And she's like, she could be an opera singer. She could be like, she's this like deep belting ranchera, comes from this like, you know, drag queen background. I was just like, oh my God, yeah. I love you.
Oh, whoa, yeah, okay. San, S-A-N-C-H-A, two words.
That's
okay,
right.
I'm checking this now. I love, it's like my favorite thing because there's nothing more like life-affirming to hear music that excites you. You know, there's so many times like you'll hear things, you're like, okay, that's fine. But then you hear something, you're like, I didn't know I was waiting to actually hear this and I couldn't articulate it, but here it is in front of me. And that is like it's the highest of the high.
I agree. Yes, indeed.
And if you had searched music, you would have gotten music, exclamation point, music, exclamation point, music, exclamation point. Put Another Nickel In, a popular song written by Steven Weiss and Bernie Baum and published in 1950.
Put a nickel in. I was going to say like 1915.
Yeah, I know. Put Another Nickel In, fella.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I guess this was when they were just finding out about music. And so the song is just them repeating music. Golly.
This music.
Holy cow. What's something you think is overrated?
Front row seats.
Mm.
Because the sound is never good in the front row. It's never, ever good. The speakers are in front. The speakers are almost right in like above you.
Yeah.
So the sound doesn't come to you. And you're like, yeah, I mean, I'm being showered by the spit of the singer, and that's, you know, one thing.
Right.
But that doesn't sound that good. So I think front row seats are overrated.
Yeah.
I got COVID from Beyonce.
But man, the low end was really all muddled though from the seats. I don't know why. I think I was right underneath the PA system, but yeah. So knowing about acoustics or sonic, you know, the way sound moves is so like vital to especially going to like a big time, like a huge festival, because a lot of times you'll see people try and get as close to the front as they can. But you know how there'll be like rows of speakers, like sound systems to like facilitate the crowd. I'm like, don't go there. Like you're going to hear the worst version of this. Like get in front of those speakers so you can actually hear it. I'm always pleasantly surprised to see how people are like just going there while leaving like the parts, the areas that sound good available to other people.
Yeah, there's always more room.
Do you notice that when you're up on stage, like the people down front are just there to like try and catch a drop of your sweat? And
it's like, I don't
just
want to
be near you.
But they have like that old
here
ear
for the
horn.
Wrong reasons.
They got a listening horn though from like the 1800s to be like, this is how I make it sound good because I'm too close. Yeah. To
I'll put a nickel in it.
Say music. Hot damn. You know, we're all performers here. We've all been on stage, but what I've never been a musician performing around the world, on stages around the world. Are there any things that you notice, like, about, you know, how people are transported, like how you know, other than it, like, this is great information that like front row seats at concerts are overrated. I've never gone and sat in the front row of a concert. So this makes me feel very confident about all my decisions and stinginess up to this point. But anything else that you can tell us just as a vet, as someone who's been there making music that is moving people?
I think the thing that's coming to my mind is like, I think the audience doesn't really, like, audiences don't fully understand how much of an impact they can have on the show. Like, an audience is, you know, there's all different kinds of audiences. And you start to notice over time, when you've been to different cities over and over again, like, different cities start to have different characters. So, like, you know, a New York audience is, like, so used to so much music. Like, they're like, okay, you got to prove it to me.
Right.
You know, so you have a lot of more work to do up top. But if you go to an audience in, like, Montreal, they're just like, it's the difference between an audience saying the same words, show me what you can do. But a Montreal audience will be like, show me what you could do. And a New York audience will be like, okay, show me what you can do. You know, right. But like the way that you give as an audience member can totally like up the show. Like, you can make the same show 10 times better by putting your own kind of energy into the mix, you know?
Right.
So, because then when you start to feed off that from the stage, it just amps the whole thing up and makes it more joyful. So I would say, like, the thing that is also underrated is, like, hooting and hollering from jump. Like, you do that and you're going to get a better experience.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
And moving your, like, I know in LA too, like, playing shows in LA and like a lot in the West Coast too, but LA especially, there's a cool factor too. If you're playing a show and the crowd does not know your work, and it is very, it almost feels like arms are crossed where they're like, cause so many people too are also like in bands and shit in the audience. Like, let me see if this is better than what the fuck I can do. And then, but the best thing is like when people just move, you know what I mean? Even if you can't, if you don't want to hoot and holler, just a head nod, just being, but uncrossing your arms, that body language too. It does a lot for people, for sure.
How do U.S. audiences compare? Like, is it kind of in the middle, or are they?
Oh, like a Chicago audience is like a Montreal audience. But I think the difference is like if you're performing in Ethiopia, or like when I performed in Egypt and things like that, you know, the idea there is they will clap and, you know, express themselves when it touches them. And so they will tell you, they are like your living pulse on when you as an artist are in a place that is like, you know, that like electric place with a little bit of sparkle and an extra kind of vibe. Like, they will say, there it is.
Right.
I saw it. Now keep going there. And it's like a, so it's, it helps to bring the whole thing into a, you know, a flow state.
Yeah. Hey, we talk about that all the time. Shout out Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the neurologist who
took class. Yeah,
and I remember we did a whole episode.
He's the neurologist who, like, like Finding Flow, that
book.
We
did a lot of a lot of research into flow state and how to achieve that. And I feel like the U.S. probably has a little bit harder of a time. We were just talking about this with relation to the similarities between being sleep deprived and having like alcoholic beverages. Like, you're wearing out that inner, like, brake pusher, the thing that like pushes the brakes and is like constantly on you, being like, don't move your body like that. People behind you are probably watching you and judging you, you know.
You're on TikTok now. Way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, that's cool. What's something you think is underrated?
Okay. Two things. Stovetop espresso, which I think is just like the percolators. They're just great.
Oh, that metal thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, the metal thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's better than French press. I think it's better than a pour over. You know, it might not be better than like a 100-year-old French machine or something, but I think it's the best you could do, you know? And then the other thing I like that I think is underrated are the cheapy headphones that you get from flight attendants on flights, because they always come in handy at the exact time when you can't find your other shit.
Oh,
it's like,
got it.
You're like, wait a minute. I have one of these in my purse. And then you need it and you have it. And those are my two.
Yeah. I'm like such a headphone nerd. Like, I'm like, I got my own cans. Thank you so much. The fidelity is way too fucked up for my ears. But hey, maybe my mother would like it because she doesn't care about how shit sounds. But yeah, it is. I never thought of it as like sort of like having like a package of Kleenex or something too, where you're like, oh, headphones. Wait, I know I have a pile of them from every flight I go on.
Exactly.
Now I will be less stuck up and I will accept them gleefully.
You just take them as your backup.
Yeah. Right.
Your backup.
Some of them break like 1.5 uses into a life cycle, but sometimes like that's not a rule. And sometimes they'll last you a year, you know, you get the real ones that are able to kind of stick together. I thought Stovetop Espresso was the Stovetop Stuffing brand expanding into the world of espresso. So I'm very glad to hear that that's not what's happening.
Just add water to like the powder. Like, there it is, and microwave it. You're good.
My God. Yeah. You thought, I'm Ethiopian. I would never do that.
I know.
That,
I was going to say. Serious about the coffee.
That's where my American brain went.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
So it probably comes in a box, the Stovetop Espresso.
It's like a...
aisle is that in?
Where do I find that? All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about presidents creating foreign policy based on some movies they just saw.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so earlier this week, Biden signed an executive order establishing new guardrails around AI technology. I remember like when it happened, it being like, now? Really? Like this is what you're... I mean, yes, AI is like was a big story a few months back and there's definitely a lot going on there and we need to be keeping our eye on it. But this is just like the timing seemed weird. Yeah. Like as there's this horrifying war happening, being waged by U.S. ally, Israel, and being funded and armed by the U.S. And he's like, so this AI stuff, am I right?
So what about student loan forgiveness?
So according to Joe, this was partly due to someone showing him, first of all, a deep fake
of himself.
Of himself, to which he responded, when the hell did I say that, man?
Hey, Jack. I'm laughing so I don't cry.
I know. And the thing is, it's so believe. It's you just know that happened. Like, I don't even need to know. Like, you know, like, when the hell did I say that?
Well, and he's doing it as like a folksy like thing where he's like, thing was so good, fooled me. Right. But it's like, yeah, but right now you are struggling with our ability to believe that you can hold it together. So you can't make self-effacing jokes in that tenor right now. Like, we need you to just have to be like, yeah, shit together a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't say exactly what deepfake it was, but I do hope that it was the one where he and Vladimir Putin are playing in a Limp Bizkit cover band. But we just don't know. We don't
know. When the hell did I say I did it all for the nookie? So I can take that cookie. What is this?
But then, according to Deputy White House Chief Bruce Reed, who I feel like has to be on Biden's shit list for this one. So part of Biden's concern over AI came after he watched Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. They did not put a colon between Dead Reckoning Part 1 because too much punctuation. But yeah. It probably should be there. At Camp David, he was like, yeah, I watched it with him, man. And he turned to me and was like, oh, no.
Then I got a lot of movies to show you, Joe.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Are you sure this wasn't an Onion article?
Right?
I know. It's too real.
So this is a movie in which Tom Cruise battles a computer that can literally see into the future. And obviously a lot of people are like, Joe. The quote from Reed, which this is the quote that I feel like gets his ass fired. If he hadn't already been concerned about what could go wrong with AI before that movie, he saw plenty more to worry about, said Reed, who watched the film with Biden. So he like watched it with him and was like, oh yeah, man, he was shaking.
You think he was doing that thing like black people do when they watch a movie, like grabbing each other and jokes?
pushing each other.
Bruce, the fuck is the fuck? What the fuck's going on here? He's like, oh, sir, it's just chat bots right now. It's not doing this shit quite yet.
I do. This does concern me because the version in his brain that he is, you know, passing legislation against or trying to address is the version of AI that the heads of the companies who are creating this and, you know, putting the money into this and releasing the products that are using this. This is the version. This is the danger they want us to believe in. Like, this is the one they're always talking about. And so it's probably not the one we actually need to worry about.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's like they want it to be, they're like, we're playing with fucking dynamite over here. This thing's going to turn into the T-1000. So you better watch out. And you also better be nice to us because we have immense power. Right. And he seems to be like, yeah, I saw the movie, man. I got that presidential debriefing, if you know what I'm saying. But
I see the light now
on HBO.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
exactly. But yeah, I mean, Louis Vertel tweeted, imagining Biden watching Mission Impossible, tilting his head to the sky and yelling, fuck. But this is, of course, far from the first time that a president has used a dumb movie as justification for policy. A far more reprehensible time was the time that Trump was using scenes from Sicario 2 in order to defend his border wall.
Yeah. He was like the cars they got. They're just supercars. They go faster than anything we've got.
They're faster than our police.
I think I blocked that out of my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about? They go faster than the police cars? And everyone's like, do you know what movie came out over the holiday break that he probably just saw? Sicario 2, where they had jet powered fucking smuggler cars.
Yes. Of course. Of course. And he had the, he probably just saw the jet powered cars. Like he, Trump is famously the guy who had like all the boring scenes edited out of like Bloodsport. So not a movie known for like its long periods of exposition, but he was like, this is too boring. Just get to the fights. But the king of this shit was, not surprisingly, because he was an actor and probably should have remained one, Ronald Reagan, who, not unlike Biden, was way too old to have his job. And also, not unlike Biden, screened a popular movie at Camp David and promptly freaked the fuck out. That movie was War Games. The 80s thriller starring Matthew Broderick. I don't know if it was a follow-up to Ferris Bueller's Day Off or if Day Off was a follow-up to this, but it's about a teenager who hacks into a government supercomputer, and Reagan brought it up at a White House meeting asking the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, well, could something like this really happen? Well, that's a, well is the only word I can say, like Ronald Reagan, unfortunately. But this actually this led to a revamp of U.S. cybersecurity policies, and clips from War Games were even shown at congressional hearings.
Oh, boy.
What?
I just don't believe me? Look at this freaky clip of Matthew Broderick in a movie.
Hey, isn't that
look
Ferris
at this
Bueller?
Fictional story.
Yeah. So this is not real. However, this is the basis for this legislation. So
yes, even Matthew Broderick, the kid who could hack into his principal's computer and change his grades, couldn't get a hold of this.
Yeah, he just identifies Matthew Broderick as like a person of interest, like in a like being a potential criminal. He's like, I've seen enough.
Take this guy down. He was apparently a huge fan of the 50s alien movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and believed that the U.S. and the USSR would certainly resolve their differences and unite if only aliens invaded. And he literally brought this theory up during a meeting with Gorbachev.
Like, wow. And Gorbachev is just doing his best to keep it together.
Yeah. Like probably looking around the room. Like he's like, or like looking at his interpreter like, again. He's like, hold on one more time. He said, what? The fucking alien? Yes.
Well, see, we know
do
that.
Do you think we could be friends? Huh? Well,
we know that movies have like this disproportionate effect on our narratives, but you don't think that it's going to be so literal.
Right.
It's just yeah, it's like. Not,
yeah. It's like we shouldn't. Look, there are a lot of ways that like the young and the old overlap and, you know. I know that I shouldn't show my 5-year-old Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And maybe we should start thinking about what media we allow the president to see, because this he just might not be ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Or fuck it, man. Like, if there's some, like,
show this man Bluey.
Rogue progressives in that administration to be like, I don't know, you said this shit. Where he's like, yeah, so we're going to fully fund Medicare for all. Like, I'm going all in on gun control. We're doing an assault weapons ban. Like, you said this shit, Joe.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's true. That's true. That's right. Yep. I'm doing that.
Yeah. We got to create a media diet, like a movie playlist for his ass, you know, because he is clearly very open to suggestion.
Yeah.
If anybody has a, you know, some suggestions on what we should put on the Joe Biden movie playlist, hit us up.
Yeah.
Because we do have a direct line to the White House. So
yeah. We have access to the Plex server they use at Camp David. So we can just put that shit right in there. And he's thinking, he's watching a rerun of The Simpsons and it's about to be some heavy shit.
Yeah. We can get Matthew Broderick to hack in there. You
know? Like, yeah, exactly. Biden's like, who did this, Broderick? Like, oh, no.
Reagan also famously got his Strategic Defense Initiative idea, aka Star Wars, from Citizens Advisory Council on National Space Policy, which was led by two sci-fi authors. And a lot of people speculated that the idea for Star Wars, which was like a massive failure. He was like, we're going to put weapons in space that can like shoot down nuclear weapons from outer space. And they were like, technology for that's like 100-200 years away. And he was like, well, do it. Let's go. And so they did it. And people were like, oh, he was in this movie called Murder in the Air, which is a 1940 spy adventure about a magic machine that protected the United States from air attack. So that's where that's coming from. And he spent trillions.
Damn,
and
they should show Joe Biden the creator then. If they right? if he really wants to go fucking off the deep end.
The creator would be good. Yeah.
That's like, right. That's what we need. More death from above.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He just sides with the U.S.
Yeah. He's like, exactly. So we got to build that. Perfect.
I like the first part, man. I like that part.
The character Reagan plays like, was called Brass Bancroft. These names are so fucking wild, bro.
Fuck yeah. Why not?
Brass Bancroft.
Yes, sir.
Good for you, man. Good for you.
Hey, good for you, man. Love it. All right. Let's talk real quick about some of the horrifying rhetoric that we're seeing that's becoming mainstream. You know, while Joe Biden continues to be soft on Netanyahu and just basically co-sign the slaughter of Palestinian people, the rhetoric is getting just fucking out of hand and Islamophobic and incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, like at best, woefully disconnected from humanity.
Yes.
And at worst, absolutely homicidal. Mm. And I just want to point out two remarks I've heard in the last few days. So Vivek Ramaswamy, who's struggling to remain relevant in the presidential primary, he spoke to the Republican Jewish Coalition in Las Vegas and said, quote, if Israel and Mossad want to take out every last leader of Hamas, wherever they may be hiding, from Doha to Dresden, host a red wedding at the Four Seasons in Qatar the next time the leaders are in town, they should go ahead and do it. And we're like, I'm sorry, what, are we using Game of Thrones rhetoric here? Then he went on Piers Morgan's show and said that I would love nothing more than for the IDF forces or the IDF to put the heads of the top 100 Hamas leaders on spikes and line them up on the Israel-Gaza border as a sign that October 7th will never happen again. That was even too much for Piers Morgan somehow. Wow. Who was like, what? He's like, that just sounds like pouring fuel on an out-of-control fire. Like, what do you, like, and also these are war crimes? Like, we're really rah-rahing this stuff for clout? And just very, like, I don't know what the reaction was in the room, but I guess maybe I don't know if he has like a Game of Thrones-based foreign policy and everything is going to be put through that lens as he tries to connect with voters or something. But again, wild, wild things to say as someone who is in pursuit of the White House. Then there was Lindsey Graham. He was on CNN two nights ago and essentially said that the number of civilian casualties should not deter Israel by any stretch of the imagination. Let me play this for you really quick.
Civilian casualties.
Is there a threshold for you, and do you think there should be one for the United States government, at which the U.S. would say, let's hold off for a second in terms of civilian casualties? Is there a point at which you would start to question?
No, if somebody asked us after World War II, is there a limit what you would do to make sure that Japan and Germany don't conquer the world? Is there any limit what Israel should do to the people who are trying to slaughter the Jews? The answer is no. There is no limit. But here's what you need to do. Be smart. Let's try to limit civilian casualties the best we can. Let's put humanitarian aid in areas that protect the innocent. I'm all for that.
Anyway, so he goes on to be like, it's wild to say there is no limit. But also, you got to be careful. It's like, you can't have that both ways, first of all, no. Lindsey Graham. And also, how are you likening the Axis powers of World War II to the Gaza Strip?
Right.
Like, what on earth are you talking about? And these are the people that have votes, you know, to decide what our foreign policy is. And he's out here casually saying this kind of stuff. I mean, it's just wild to see, because I feel like, I think like many people, we're like in some kind of twilight zone where like, I feel like a lot of these politicians are using this dusty ass propaganda playbook to manufacture consent for further military action. When so many people, myself included, because I was coming of age during the second Iraq war, that I remember how everything was like, don't matter, we're going in there and everybody's getting messed up. You saw 9/11. And right. That same way of like pointing to this event to then say, now everything's on the table, is horrifying, especially now because we live in an era where you can see what the actual the results are of this kind of rhetoric. And Democrats, y'all are also doing a terrible job. The best I'm hearing are forceful calls for a humanitarian pause.
I mean, you even heard it in the CNN interview, the thing that she's trying to get Lindsey Graham, or just asking Lindsey Graham, like the humane position is, would the U.S. or would Israel stop for a second? I believe she literally said for a second.
Right.
Like,
well, the rhetoric that, you know, you see like from a lot of the defense, like the hawks in Congress is sort of like, well, any pause allows them to build up munitions or fortify their positions. And it's like, I'm sorry, they are not out here to take over the world. Like, I get how maybe in the 40s, you're like, this is what Hitler's trying to do. He's trying to take over the fucking world. But this is not this situation by any stretch of the imagination. And to liken it to that further dehumanizes these people and allows for this kind of shit to continue. And like, everything, I feel like there's such an outsized emphasis on what is happening with like the Jewish people who are living around the world. And I completely understand that seeing groups of Jewish people be senselessly slaughtered is horrifying and will put you in a position where like, oh my God, this is bringing back all kinds of things because this is something that is very relevant to the history of my people. Yeah. But yeah. I don't see a single thing that's really actually centering what the experience is for Muslim people, for Arab people, for other people who just might see their situation unfolding in a very similar way that it is in Gaza and the West Bank. And meanwhile, you have people like Lindsey Graham come on and like, yeah, it's all good, man. Like, it doesn't matter how many civilians die. Or Vivek Ramaswamy being like, yeah, call me George R.R. Martin with it. Like, yeah. No.
I mean, the dehumanization, the devaluation exactly. of Palestinian life is just unbelievable. And it's like, you want humanitarian aid? Yes, we need humanitarian aid. Turn on the water. Turn yeah. on the water. First thing, give people clean. Like, that seems like an act that you could take in a heartbeat. In a second,
They claim they turned on the water, but all the pipes, they bombed everything so that nothing is worse. So you can't fucking, yeah.
Well, and not to mention that like some of the pumps require energy to move right. the water. And if there's no electricity or fuel, then what? And it's just wild how
like start that thing, you know?
Right. Exactly. Like yeah. you're using a siphoning hose or something to move water around. And it is just wild to see that the hammer come down on people who have out loud just called for things like a ceasefire.
Yes.
And I think that's really, it just shows you where like the momentum of where this thing is going and like what the media is just allowing it to be too. Like, I mean, I'm slowly starting to see more like diverging opinions be represented on TV, but these first couple weeks, it felt like, bro, don't even say anything about Palestinian people.
Yeah.
Don't even try it. And it's yeah. that is so, so disheartening, too, because after seeing what this country went through or tried to have a reckoning with white supremacy in 2020 and seemingly thinking like we understood what oppression was, like we get to this one and now we've gone completely in just outer space with it. And that's what's really, I think, messes a lot of people up because they're like, of course, innocent Israeli civilians don't deserve to be killed.
Of course.
But how are we now just acting like those destroyed buildings don't have human beings under the rubble, don't have screams coming out from under there that are actual legitimate human beings that had nothing to do with what happened on October 7th?
And children have yeah. nothing to do with thousands and thousands of children.
Yeah.
You know, how can you say you're targeting militants when children are dying at these yeah. levels?
There was even one of these like a lieutenant colonel from the IDF was on Wolf Blitzer's show, and even Wolf Blitzer was like, "So you bombed this refugee camp?" And the IDF spokesman was like, "Well, yeah, but there was a Hamas commander in there," and they're like, "Yeah, but you knew there were refugees there, like people had been displaced," and he's like, "Yeah," and he's like, "Well, you dropped the bomb, you bombed it anyway," and he's just sort of like, "Wolf, that's just kind of like the tragedy of war, you know." And just leaving it like there. And I like just to hear those things said out loud and not to like have any sort of real counterbalance to that is also it's hard to watch because we see this play out so many times in so many different ways around the world. But yeah, it's so vivid right now. And you're just asking like it, the best we can do is ask for a pause to the bombing. And then, because that presumes that it will resume.
Yeah. Just a quick pause. Just let's take a beat, you know?
Like yeah.
That's the best that we've got going in the mainstream media.
Yeah. And it's fucked. Yeah. So again, I think this goes along with too. I'm seeing more and more people starting posting that polling about how Joe Biden's support is cratering with so many groups right now because of the lack of action or just even words that seemingly come off as being as acknowledging the value of human life. And yeah. But hey, I don't even know. Like, I guess when the war machine is like in the on position, like they don't give a fuck about polls or anything or what public sentiment is.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zai Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back, and it is time. It's time. Isn't that the catchphrase of
Michael Buffer? Bruce Buffer's no, lesser.
Bruce Buffer is the brother, right? Isn't Michael Buffer
Michael
the main?
Buffer's, Michael
so Michael Buffer
let's get ready to
came
rumble.
With the "Let's get ready to rumble," which I just got sued for. I no longer have a job. And then his brother came and was like, "Oh, you think that's good? Well, you can hire me, and I'll say." It's time.
Thank you.
Three claps in a hollow, empty auditorium. So Mariah Carey came for him, though. She's stepping on his turf. This happens every year. It's become a tradition that at midnight on Halloween, Mariah Carey drops a video that is basically her being like, all right, it's time. It's Christmas time now.
It's November 1st.
It's Christmas time. This is apparently the beginning of the Christmas season. Starbucks agrees. Starbucks holiday cups are hitting stores today on the 2nd. So,
I mean, I know why, but come on. Like, let's have a little, let's have a a little bit of a break really quick before we go dive headfirst into the shit, but okay.
So they went creative with the video this year. And so it opens with a vault in, like, I don't know, like an elaborate vault somewhere in the North Pole is kind of the vibe I got. You go in the vault and there's a Jason Voorhees, Ghostface from Scream.
Yep.
By the way, Ghostface from Scream, a pumpkin head. Ghostface from Scream, the most popular Halloween costume I saw last night.
Really?
Or on Halloween night. Yeah, trick or treat. Like, for ages 2 through adult, we're wearing
It's more creepy
Ghostface.
When it's 2.
Yes, it was way too...
Like, especially too like the way a 2-year-old would walk, too. It's already kind of, like, not graceful. So, like, add that with, like, murder costume. Okay, sure, kid.
But, yeah, Scream is in the collective bloodstream right now. But anyways, yeah, so we got Jason. We got Ghostface from Scream. We got Pumpkinhead and a fourth monster who they don't really show. So I'm assuming they didn't get the rights to them. They are... And then there's Mariah Carey in a big block of ice.
Yeah. And then she hits that whistle tone, shatters the ice block that she's encased in, like this is Demolition Man or something.
Yes.
And then is like, it's time! And then we get the song and it's
Wait, what does she say?
Doesn't she say, I can't do it.
It's time!
That whistle, look, nobody can hit those whistle tones like hers. I won't even try. But I don't, it's just wild how it goes from the world, like Jack, you're talking about, it is like you were saying how it's funny to think that they're all hanging out like in this vault, like with Mariah Carey most days of the year, basically.
Yeah. And they're also using, when we find them, they are helping her get out of the block of ice by using hair dryers on the block of ice. So this posits a world where Jason Voorhees and Ghostface and all the famous slasher monsters are just like dying to defrost her and get the holiday season started.
Yeah.
So they can stop murdering. They don't like murder.
And also that Mariah Carey does a cryo sleep from the end of like December 26th to November 1st every year.
Which would explain how she is aging backwards, because she
that is true.
Incredible.
Yeah,
less she
stress.
Did look incredible.
Less
I think I don't even think she's saying it's time for the holiday season. She's saying it's time for me to have another number one hit with that same song again.
Yes.
How do we know?
Isn't it like
every
year it's number one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do we know the economics of what that is like? Like,
I don't.
I'm so curious. Like, is charting number one, and I'm sure like you're getting a lot of spins or whatever, it's translating to some kind of money. But like, I wonder what exactly like that check is looking like every year. Which is like, I'm done with it.
I think it's probably like the streaming. It's enough streams that it's probably real streaming money, but it's also like the placements.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Oh, for sure. Okay.
Here's an article from Billboard on the 3rd of this year, the 3rd day of this year, January 3rd, 2023. Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You adds 12th week atop Hot 100.
That's what I'm talking about.
That is wild.
They say she makes around $3 million a year from it.
From that song.
Just from that. Playing. Yeah, let alone the commercials and the licensing.
And they do not pay you for streams. So like that's a lot of streams. That means that song is playing in a million households across America right now.
It's probably like at any given second it's playing somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What other song? I mean, that's powerful. That's,
she's pretty smart, I have to say. Like,
can you imagine, like, all like the way we've shifted up Christmas earlier and earlier and earlier? It's all because of Mariah. She's like, no. Watch this. You want me to really mess up people's marketing plans? Drop the video on November 1st.
But have we reached the limit? Like, there's no way that Christmas can go before can Christmas go before Halloween?
July 5th. After the fireworks.
Shoot, July 3rd. That would be total domination. And she's like, it's July 1st. You know what that means. I'm ready. Just blowing it up. Oh, but I mean, the thing is, too, despite it being played so much, I'm not tired of it.
No. It.
I don't know why.
Because you got a 9-month break.
Right.
You did.
Yeah. You got a 9-month break. You don't have to hear it in March, you know?
Are you a fan of All I Want for Christmas Is You?
I'm a fan of Mariah Carey. When her first record came out, I was like, like when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Huge fan. And that, you know, that high-pitched scream. So I definitely listened to her at a very formative time. And I just have a lot of love for her. Like, you know, maybe in my teenage years, I, you know, turned away. But sure. And it's not like I play her regularly, but I have a lot of love for her and appreciation for her. And I think she's, I don't know, she's quite the businesswoman, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really want to see like some forensic accounting about like, because everyone's estimating. Some people are saying she's made $60 million in total since the song has come out. Other people are saying it's like $2.5 to $3 million a year. I really want to know, like, I want to see how Mariah Carey sees the world when it's time to dust this track off and be like, oh, baby, let's just turn the money hose on, please.
To quote ODB, baby, baby, come on, baby, come on, baby, come on. Another song that I can still turn on, Fantasy Remix. Oh, my God. That song still goes so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I what about just how are you with Christmas music in general as a musician?
Hey, really don't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, okay. I can't with the Christmas music. See, my family really loves it, and they play a lot, like around Christmas time. I can't get away from it with my family, but I cannot.
What's...
But that song, I don't mind. The only other Christmas songs that I kind of like is that the Otis Redding, Merry Christmas, Baby.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you got to have something in there that's like underneath it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're just hearing like Dean Martin and shit all day.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and hey, shout out Dean.
Sound happy and drunk.
Yeah. Bing Crosby, you're cool. But like, give us a little bit of soul. That's why I have like
a
Sharon Jones like holiday album that's also really good too. That you kind of gotta level it out with some, you know, Dap Kings sometimes too. But yeah. Jack, you got a favorite?
The Otis Redding one's really good. Happy Christmas by Toots.
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay. I love that one. I need a little something extra.
Yeah, I think we call that seasoning.
A little seasoning. Yeah. I can't do the straight holiday seasoning. The mayonnaise sandwiches from Bing Crosby every year, just not getting it done for me. I like that one Pretenders song that's kind of about Santa Claus. It's like a very sad song about Santa Claus.
Yeah.
That one's really good. I like that one John Lennon song, Happy Christmas, War Is Over. I've got a whole playlist. You know.
And McLee, what's the one that you're plugging your ears when you hear?
Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe Blue Christmas?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like you should be drinking like gin and like out of a brown bag, like in like a snowy alley when that song comes on. You know what I mean?
It doesn't feel like in bus stop.
Yeah, exactly. I don't feel like my family.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of songs that were just like, yeah, and you can't be with the people you love.
I know. It sucks, it's actually for you. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're already having a hard time with the weather.
We feel like that's an overserved market, guys. People who can't be with the people they love.
I'll Be Home for Christmas, which is a good song. But
it is a good song.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah.
I do regret to inform you that I could listen to you sing the Otis song all day. So you might have
Christmas
to
album.
A Christmas album.
Christmas what? Album, McLean.
But you know, well, I mean, then you look at Mariah Carey and you're like, this is a good idea.
Right.
But does it have to be? Does it have to be? Here's my thing. It doesn't have to be Christmas. There's a lot of holidays. Like you write a Halloween song. It plays every Halloween. You could do it with any holiday. And there would actually be less competition if you were doing it around like another holiday.
Thanksgiving. You
know? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a New Year's song. Like I have a New Year's song coming out on Ethiopian New Year's is like a really, really, really big holiday. And I have an Ethiopian New Year song coming out for the next Ethiopian New Year's. And I know now forever, every year, it will be bumped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're like,
there you go.
I found the pocket and here I am. Because I remember that was like, it was like standard operating procedure for like pop artists for decades. To be like, where's your Christmas album, NSYNC? Where's your Christmas album, Annie Lennox? And you're like, what? Okay, sure. But yeah, give us something. Give us someone, give us a fucking Halloween album.
Halloween is probably the least underserved of all the other holidays, and rightly so. It is the best holiday, but it's still like a little thin. Like after you get through Thriller and
Monster Mash,
and like there are definitely the iconic hits, but it's like Christmas could have its own just radio station year round.
Yes,
it shouldn't, but it could easily have that. There's just no, like Halloween is like a couple hours playlist and you're like, should we do the Monster Mash again? Well, we're doing that like Purple People Eater song that was like made for like kids' birthday parties in the 1950s. Like, what the fuck are we doing here?
I want to say, like, there should be the Mother's Day and Father's Day songs, though, because that would, like, that seems like...
Boys to Men gave us Mama.
Yeah, Dear Mama.
You know I love you. I mean, there's that one. But yeah.
I forgot that one.
Where's the one for dads? There's a lot of ones that's like, shout out to you, dad.
Butterfly like, Kisses.
Oh, God.
And it's just a dad being real schmaltzy.
That one is the freakiest fucking song. When you go to a wedding... And you got the first dance to that song?
Oh my God.
I've been to more than one wedding where Butterfly Kisses was the bride and father dance track. And I'm like, yo, this is like a little, this is too freaky, man. No.
Yeah. There's a good father song. I think it's called Father of the Bride by Hamilton Lighthouser from The Walkmen. I'd recommend that.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought you were going to say Father of Mine.
is that a song? No, it's called The Bride's Dad.
By Everclear. Father of mine.
Oh yeah,
tell me where have you been?
Okay, easy. This one is about, like, unfortunately it's not interesting if it's a good dad. It has to, like, The Bride's Dad, the song I was talking about, is like about a dad who's like shows up to his daughter's wedding and like gives a speech and he's like a little drunk and his like suit is like dirty, but it's kind of cute.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Do you know the lyrics to Butterfly? You've heard Butterfly Kisses?
I mean, McLean? I can hear the guy's voice, like, you know, like, throaty.
Yeah, yarling about blinking into his daughter's eyes.
Yeah.
I cannot remember the song, and I'm not sure if it's because I've blocked it out or because I actually don't remember, but yeah.
It's like each thing's like, there's two things I know for sure. She was sent from heaven, and she's daddy's little girl. As I drop to my knees by her bed at night, she talks to Jesus, and I close my eyes, and I thank God for all of the joy in my life. Oh, but most of all, for Butterfly Kisses.
Butterfly Kisses.
And then it's like,
that's like kind of creepy somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, it's definitely like squarely inside the culture that gave us like purity promises and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because then the next verse. Sweet 16 today. She's looking like her mama a little more every day.
Oh, no.
Yo, one part woman, the other part girl.
Yo.
Easy, dad. Easy.
Dad, don't
back the fuck up, dad.
Don't let this guy give a speech at your wedding.
And don't play this at a wedding, for God's sake, DJ.
Butterfly Kisses.
It's wild to be at. It's like, see someone like a dad holding her daughter and stuff. He's like, she'll change her name today. She'll make a promise and I'll give her away. Standing in the bride room, just staring at her. She asked me what I'm thinking and I said, I'm not sure. I just feel like I'm losing my baby girl. Okay, Bob. Thanks, Bob Carlisle.
Is this like one of the ways that we've come a long way around patriarchy? Like that we can all like be horrified by this.
No,
30 years later.
For sure. We're like, you don't own her, Bob Carlisle.
Bob Carlisle. Like that just sounds like it's the name of your fucking like typing teacher from middle school or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
Bob Carlisle. Did you hear the song Bob Carlisle wrote about his daughter?
Wow, it's a banger, man. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
It's the most dad-ass name I've ever heard. Wow.
Yeah, you just feel someone coming up to you. Hey, Bob Carlisle. Nice to meet you.
Bob Carlisle. Okay, nice to meet you. Keep your damn hands off my little girl.
Yeah.
What?
You know that, you know that handshake. About, man? You know, and you know that handshake is compensating.
Yeah.
When you shake that hand, it's like, hey, nice to meet you, Bob Carlisle. You're like, okay, easy, man. I get it. Butterfly kisses.
First of all, I just met you and your family. Second of all, you're gesturing at a 45-year-old woman right now, as you say, keep my hands off your little girl, you weirdo. Macleet Hedero, what a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
Find me, follow me at Macleet Music. That's my handle on Instagram and all the things, and MacleetMusic.com. It's M-E-K-L-I-T. And even if you forget, you know, remember that I live in San Francisco. If you Google Ethiopian singer San Francisco, there I come go. Right up.
It's called SEO. That's called That's SEO. Right. Yeah.
That's right. Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
I'm going to shout out an album called Ting Mong, which just came out by the LA-based band Dengue Fever. They're great. It's like a Cambodian kind of throwback psychedelic rock band. And the lead singer, her name is Nimol, Chom Nimol. She comes from a family of traditional singers in Cambodia, and she is badass. Like every note that comes out of her mouth brings you into like a place where you're like, okay, I don't understand any of the lyrics, and I'm 100% with her, like at every single song that she sings, every note that she plays. And Dengue Fever is just like, they're a treasure. They have a new record, Ting Wong, and all the songs on it are pretty fantastic. So that's my pick.
Amazing. Miles, where can people find you? Is there work in media you've been enjoying?
At Base Platforms, Miles of Gray. Find us on our basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. Find me on my 90 Day Fiance show, 420 Day Fiance. And also The Good Thief, where it's the true crime show where we are in pursuit of the Greek Robin Hood. Let's see, a tweet that I like is actually an excerpt from a Joe Rogan interview that Ben Collins at @_ tweeted. Just said, how is this real? And this is the excerpt. It says, don't worry, Rogan explained. I got my blood work done. And the doctor says, you have arsenic in your blood, Rogan continued. I go, is someone poisoning me? He said, it's very low levels. The doctor asked about Rogan's fish consumption, which revealed the problem. Rogan told the doctor, yeah, I eat like 3 cans of sardines a night. A shocked Musk retorted, that's a lot of sardines, man. I love sardines, Rogan said passionately. I love them. I really do. I've always loved sardines.
Holy shit.
Just a 3-can night, huh? All right.
You might have a salt deficiency, man. That's a lot. Holy shit.
It's a lot of sardines. I mean, I like sardines. 3 cans before Betty buy? I don't know about that.
But every day?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you would have to crave them to do that. Just, like, think about it during the day. I mean, that's...
The body craves what's in the blood, they say, you know? So if all your blood is sardines, then you're probably just powered off sardines.
he probably smells really good, too. Yeah. sardines all the time. Anyways, you can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. I don't know. What's the work of media? I watched Halloween 2. I had never seen Halloween 2 before. That was my horror movie for Halloween evening. And it was a fun time. I will say the Halloween films seem to posit a universe of human beings who, like, a universe where human beings never developed peripheral vision. Because there are so many moments where they are looking, like, just to the left of Michael Myers and have no fucking clue he's there.
He's like tapping their shoulders. He's like, one second.
That literally happens. One time he comes up behind a girl and like puts his hand on her shoulder and she starts sucking on his finger because she thinks he's a dude that Michael Myers actually just killed.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
How did he handle that? Hopefully Michael Myers wasn't a creep about the whole thing.
Also, his hands were like mad dirty. Like,
yeah, dude. Without even knowing, I'm like, Michael Myers does not wash his fucking hands.
Fool's been leaving bloody handprints everywhere. And then she's just like, yeah. Anyways, that's my pick. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song are we sending people out?
I was actually listening to Macleet's album On a Day Like This, and there is a track on there that I was really fucking with. It's called Soleil Soleil.
Hey!
I love the percussion. I love the horns. It's like sax in there with some strings, too.
All of the above. And yeah, also bass clarinet, baby. Bass clarinet.
I love the textures. I love the palette that's being used on this track. And not to mention your vocals, everything. So this is, y'all got to look it up. But this is Macleet's track, Soleil Soleil.
All right. Well, we will link off to that in the footnotes.
Footnote.
The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
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 Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.